This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in today for Anthony Brooks. Today on Radio Boston, we'll talk to a Boston University student who wrote an amazing play about Fallujah.
And we'll take a look at a study about how new moms may be paying such great attention to the health of their new babies, they're not taking such great care of themselves. Mm.
But first, Meghna, I hold in my hands a vestige from another era. It is an honest-to-goodness letter printed on paper and mailed through the U.S. postal system.
Wow, that is actually so quaint. It's kind of retro cool.
I know. So it's from a listener named Dave, and here's what he said. I would like to suggest a topic for Meghna Chakrabarty and Anthony Brooks to tackle.
And I'm sure he actually meant you too, Adam.
I have no doubt. I'll continue. Here's his suggestion. The low recycling rates in downtown Boston and generally citywide. Residents in downtown Boston recycle only 10% of their trash compared to a 70% recycling rate in San Francisco.
I raise my judgmental hand and say shame. Shame on you, Boston.
So that 10% number comes from a recent article in the Boston Current, which incidentally Dave was kind enough to provide to us in his paper envelope.
Also on paper,
I know. A paper newspaper. No. All the more an oddity. Anyway, so this article refers to the Back Bay, Beacon Hill, and Fenway, and the South End. And the recycling rate for all of municipal Boston is actually a bit higher than that. It's around 20%.
Okay, I'll be honest. I'm a little confused now. So what does this all mean?
Basically, it's the percentage of the waste that is recycled. So if you put out 10 pounds of trash and 5 of those pounds went into recycling, your recycling rate would be 50%. So here's what Dave wanted to know. Why are Boston's downtown residents so reluctant to recycle? How have other cities done? Which cities have greater success? Could you interview someone at San Francisco or another city with a high recycling rate?
Well, we actually thought that, you know, those were really great questions.
Indeed.
And so we're going to dig into them right now in today's talker. And Dave, we promise we will also recycle your letter and the newspaper clipping that
you
sent
frame
us.
It,
Well, we also want to hear from you, listeners. Do you recycle? Oh, I just hope no one calls in and says they don't. Or maybe if you don't, we especially want to hear from you.
No, we want to hear from you, definitely.
Do you recycle everything or just some things when it's convenient? And what could make you recycle more? What if you had to pay a fee that correlated with the amount of trash you threw away? Is that a good idea or a step too far? So give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK.
And here to help us dig a little deeper into this topic is Greg Cooper, Director of Recycling for the Mass DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, right?
Good afternoon, Adam.
How's it going, Greg? And also with us is Ann Dorfman, Director of Mass Recycle. Hi, Ann.
Thank you for having me here.
I'm glad that you guys are here. So let me read out some numbers. This is percentage of solid waste recycled by town as of 2008, which was the most recent year we could find data for at the Mass DEP website. Chelsea, 7%. Boston, 13%. Cambridge, 33%. Worcester, 43%. Needham, 67%. Nantucket, 91%. That's almost as wide of a spread as you could have, like literally. So, Greg, what's the big difference between all these places?
Well, I think, Adam, it comes down to the type and level of program that they have in place. Many of the communities that have the most successful programs out there, such as Worcester, have what's called a pay-as-you-throw program, where basically residents are charged an amount for every bag of trash they put out on the curb.
How does that work?
So you are given special bags that you would then place your trash into every day and set those at the curb, and those bags are bought by the resident for anywhere from $1 to, you know, $2.50 per bag. What that does is they also then provide recycling for free. And what that does is it incentivizes the resident to actually participate in the recycling program as much as possible in order to reduce their costs for getting rid of their trash.
I guess, Ann Dorfman, let me ask you this about pay-as-you-throw, just because we're talking about it right here at the top. We've got all these different models, but on the whole, are we seeing more recycling or less?
Well, pay-as-you-throw is widely recognized as being one of the most effective ways to get people to recycle. And over the years, it's been implemented more and more frequently in the municipalities in Massachusetts. I think it's somewhere around 30% of the communities now have these programs.
Okay.
And those programs are all doing an awful lot more recycling than the communities that don't have any such incentive programs in place.
There's the environmental argument for recycling, but that's not necessarily going to get everyone on board. Is the pay-as-you-go model trying to replace the moral motivation or the enlightened self-interest motivation with financial motives?
I think what we've found is that the moral ethical motivation only gets you so far. I often think that there's 10-20% of the people who are going to really go out of their way, do the right thing, even if it means going to extra effort. Mm. There's another 5-10% that are never going to do the right thing, and you shouldn't bother wasting your time with them. And then you have the people in the middle who, if it's easy for them, they'll do it, but they're not going to go out of their way. What the pay-as-you-throw program does is it doesn't target the two groups at the end. It targets that middle group, and it gives them an incentive to participate where they might otherwise not have gone to the trouble.
I imagine that something like that could work really easily in a community that's filled with single-family residences where I just, you know, I get up in the morning, I put my trash at the end of the driveway, and that's it. But for someone like me who lives in an apartment building where all of our trash is just going into the dumpster, even if we were to pay as we throw, that cost would end up getting kind of diffused through the whole building, and I don't feel like I would have that kind of immediate economic incentive to reduce my solid waste. Greg, is there a way of handling that in a pay-as-you-throw system?
Well, there are methods to deal with how to appropriate the costs amongst the various households, whether they're multifamily or single family. Another way that programs such as Boston is doing to implement more recycling is going towards what's called single stream recycling, which is where you are provided a big cart that may be 64 gallons or 96 gallons, and all of your recycling can go into that cart, whether it's the papers, the bottles, the cans. What that does is it makes it easier for residents to participate. It provides them more of space, more container space to put all of their recyclables into it. And the results that we're seeing is that it's increasing recycling anywhere from 20% to 30% in places where it's implemented. In Boston, they've rolled out single stream across the city, mm-hmm. and they have seen an over 40% increase in recycling tonnage since doing so.
So where is Boston at right now as far as your most recent data?
From ours, it is the 19% figure.
Okay, 19%. Okay. I mean, I live in Cambridge, and Cambridge just went to single stream in October, I think it was. And I'm still getting used to it. And I'll tell you sort of my psychological process as I do this, because it's like I'm still getting used to not having to separate things up in the apartment. And then when I take stuff down to the basement to put it all into the recycling bin, the recycling bin just looks like a mess. And I've got this big thing, you know, that's a mess that's got paper and bottles and all kinds of stuff. And it just feels wrong when I throw it in. And it just looks like a mess, and there's broken glass, and there's everything. And I'm like, I don't understand how this is possibly going to work when it gets to the recycling center. So, Ann Dorfman, I mean, does single-stream recycling lessen the possibility or the odds that this material is actually going to get successfully recycled?
I think your experience is very similar to a lot of the diehard, that 20% at the top, which... Perhaps,
thank you for putting me in that class. I appreciate it.
I think that for those people who are already doing the sorting, that made sense, and it still makes sense for them. I've had single stream in my community for over a year now, and I still have different containers. I've been unable to combine everything together. It's been a challenge.
You're an addict.
But I think that the 20% is a much smaller percentage than that group in the middle. And I'm always surprised, but I am approached regularly by people who say, oh, we have single stream and it's so much easier. And I think we have to remember, those of us who are environmentalists and really care about this need to remember that we're not targeting 20%. We really want to bring everybody along.
So I'm sensitive to the public relations challenge that you're facing in me posing this question to you because you don't want to discourage people from taking that extra half a second it takes to divert their bottle from the trash bin to their recycling bin because they're worried, they're thinking, oh, well, what's the point? Because, I mean, it's not even going to get recycled once it gets to the plant. That said, there's still an issue here, isn't there?
It's not that it's not getting recycled. The problem is more that people are putting in non-recyclable stuff, that you're getting more of the stuff, which is a problem, than that the stuff once mixed together isn't getting properly sorted out. I think one of the things when I think about the single stream is that think about where we want it to be 10 or 20 years from now. That in fact, the single stream sorting process is getting better and better every year. If we look back to the way it was 5 years ago, it was much more rudimentary. And I think it's getting more and more sophisticated. it is going to make things easier if you can put everything in there except, you know, a very small amount of non-recyclable stuff. Ultimately, that I think makes sense as the long-term goal for us is actually to pull out the stuff that's the real trash and put everything else together in one place.
Well, go ahead.
I think the concern isn't that this stuff isn't getting recycled. It is, I think, the one product that is problematic right now is glass.
Glass.
It does, and exactly what's going to happen with glass in the long run is, I don't know, but I don't know what the answer to that is, because it does create, at the moment, it does create problems for the paper processing.
What problem does it create? I guess I can imagine a lot of problems caused by shards of glass in stuff. Yeah.
They are able to handle it. It does not make the product non-recyclable. It just means that the process is more problematic. The machinery gets worn out more quickly because of the grit that's now running through it. It used to be this nice soft strings of things that now has this grit. So the machinery has to be equipped to handle that. So it just means it's a more difficult process. But the materials are still getting recycled. The sorting process is really quite remarkable, how they go through everything and separate all the different materials, the different techniques they use. But for the most part, it is happening.
Well, listeners, if you've ever had that moment of pause where you just got that empty bottle in your hand and you're thinking, trash, recycling, and you're like, I want to be a good person, but is this even the right bin, or do I have to take the cap off and throw it away separately? Do I have to wash it? What actually gets recycled in the end? If you live in Massachusetts, my guests right now probably have the answer to any question that you might have. We're speaking with Greg Cooper, Director of Recycling for the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, and Ann Dorfman, Director of Mass Recycle. You can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Dean is on the line from Hyde Park. How's it going, Dean?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Do you recycle?
Yes, I do. I'm probably not as careful as I should be about putting things in the bin, which maybe don't belong. I mean, single stream certainly facilitates that process of just putting everything in it that you think can get recycled. But we compost our food scraps as well, and I live in a household with two adults, including myself, and one teenager, and we put out less than a full bag of garbage a week.
Less than a full bag of garbage a week?
Well, less than a full bag. Yeah,
that's impressive.
But we have a housemate who is about 20, and he, you know, not every week, but I see sometimes in a week he may put out a full bag of garbage, and that means that from time to time he's putting out three times as much garbage as we are, because he's only one and we're three, and I don't think he recycles anything.
I appreciate that, Dean. I mean, Greg, is it your instinct that Dean's housemate maybe it just doesn't occur to him how easy it is to recycle now that Boston is single stream?
You know, there's a constant need for education and raising awareness on it. People move from town to town. They may be in a dorm one day and in an apartment the next in a single family. So there needs to be constant effort on the part of the community to kind of communicate, how's the program work? Here's how you can participate. Here's how easy it is. So this may be an instance where more education is needed.
Absolutely. Let's get Shiona on the line from Mattapan. Hey, Shiona.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm glad that you called in. Do you recycle?
Yes, we definitely do. My husband and I both recycle, but it did take us some time to get to where we are now. We started out when Boston had the very small bins, and so we would kind of recycle till the bin got full, and then we would just go into trash. And now that we have those much larger bins, we are recycling just about everything that we can and then composting a lot of our trash. So between the two of us, we maybe actually have garbage once every 2 weeks.
Once every 2 weeks.
Yes.
But the trash guys still come every week.
Yes.
I'm just curious, because I know some communities have done this. If you could opt to have a lower trash bill and only have trash pick up at your house bi-monthly or monthly, would you do that?
Yes, I definitely would do that. We don't have a lot of trash now that we're consciously making the effort to recycle, but like I said, it did take time for us. I mean, this is years of training the husband to remember to put things in the recycling bin and not the trash can.
It's like he's a cat. Thanks, Shiona. I appreciate the call. This speaks to something, guys, doesn't it, which is that you know, there's kind of a psychological suggestion inherent in the size of our trash receptacles, right? Like, there's, you've got the recycling bin, which the traditional recycling bin is kind of yay by yay. It's sort of small, whereas, like, the traditional trash bin is this thing that's as tall as you are that you wheel out to the driveway. Do we need to flip that around?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a whole perception on how we handle our trash that needs to change. I mean, we've, you know, traditionally, like you said, had a very small recycling bin and a big trash container. Yes, we've leveled that now in terms of in many places where there's a container that for recycling that's the same size as a
trash container.
Yeah,
I know. In Brookline, they got great big new recycling bins recently, and there was a lot of community outcry about it.
But the other thing is that we have to also get by the fact that trash is not free. In historically, that's been buried in our taxes, and we've set out bags and bags and bags of trash, and we've really not thought about how much it actually costs to get rid of that waste.
No doubt trash costs money, but let me push you on that a little bit, because I bet recycling costs money too, and it's probably subsidized at many different levels. When you consider the entire cycle of the waste, you know, if I'm in a pay-as-you-throw system, if I live in Worcester where I have to pay for each bag of trash I put out on the yard, the recycling is going to cost me nothing. Trash is going to cost me something. But when you consider everyone who's paying along the line, which is more expensive, recycling or throwing something in the landfill?
Well, I think once you've been committed to providing recycling services to your residents, every single ton that you move out of the trash barrel and into a recycling container saves the community money. It costs about $70 to $80, even upwards of $100 a ton to get rid of trash in the state. And in most cases, recycling is getting taken away for free.
I see.
So there's an automatic savings every single time people are dropping containers and papers in their recycling bin for the community.
Let's go to Molly, who's calling in from Rockport. Molly, do you have pay-as-you-throw in Rockport?
Yes, we do. And I think it works pretty well for us, although I see a lot of people don't participate. But my comment is that we could use a lot smaller of a container. What we have is different size of bags, and we use the smallest one, which is a 50-cent bag. But for our household, we could actually use a bag about a half or a quarter that size. And I thought that would be encouraging people to be more thorough about what they recycle.
Well, bless you for that, Molly. I'm curious, though, do you see your neighbors, like, kind of trying to jam, you know, boats and washing machines into little plastic bags?
No, not really. I actually see people who don't use them at all, and I'm sort of amazed at that. You know, they pay a lot for a dump sticker. We pay very little. I'm really happy at the pay-as-you-throw option. If we have to throw away something large, maybe we'll pay $5 to get rid of a chair or something, but it's no big deal.
All right, I appreciate the call, Molly. This kind of brings up another possible pitfall in my mind, which is in a pay-as-you-throw system, is there, do you see an increase in illegal dumping when those are implemented in towns? Ann Dorfman?
You know, I think communities worry a lot about that. And what we found, in fact, you don't see a lot of illegal dumping in terms of people leaving things. Often people are concerned you're going to see it in the parks, at the river, in the woods, places like that. And the history has shown that that is not where you see it. What you do see, which is always very interesting, is a significant reduction in trash, which is not equal to a comparable increase in recycling. There's a little bit of a mystery as to where that missing trash goes. Is it, I think originally people were thinking, oh, you're taking it from the community that now has pay-as-you-throw and you're dropping it off at your aunts in a neighboring community. I think it's more likely that the trash that was already in there shouldn't have been there in the first place. You had people who owned businesses who were bringing their work trash from work to home, and it was being paid for by the municipality. And once the business is now being charged for it at home as well as at work, it's more convenient for them to come up with a way to handle it right there in their office.
Okay, well, I want to get back to the letter that started this all. Our listener, Dave, who was discouraged to read that the 10% recycling rate in downtown Boston and how that stacks up with the 70% rate that he read they had in San Francisco, our West Coast counterpart, if we have one, I guess. The big question is that wild discrepancy just a function of those San Francisco values that we hear about, or is it something a little more? So on the line with us to explain is Kevin Drew. He is the residential zero waste coordinator for the city of San Francisco. Kevin, exactly how much of your waste do San Franciscans recycle?
Well, we're the last year that we have numbers for is 2008, and we are at 77% diversion, which is according to the state calculator, which is there's a nuance there. It's probably slightly inflated from what other cities may count because it includes the industrial and commercial sector
That
number. It's not just households. It's the whole city as a whole. But it's what the whole state of California uses to do their calculations, and we're at 77%.
That's a remarkable, remarkable number. Now, I understand that you guys have a three-bin system. There's a black bin, a blue bin, and a green bin. How does it work?
Right. We've got three bins. The black bin is for what goes to landfill. The green bin is for organics, and the blue bin is for recycling. In the conversation you had about the size of bins, we give everybody the same size when we set them up, 32 gallons. But you can get a bigger blue and a bigger green if you request them at no additional cost. Even the blue and the green come at no additional cost. You only are paying for the black portion of the service. And so you're getting 3 times 32, 96 gallons of service 4 times a week for about $28.
Let me ask you about that green bin, because that's interesting. You said organic. So that's cooking,
yeah.
And that's old food. It's stuff that, you know, I would throw on the compost pile were I not to happen to live in an apartment building. And if I had a compost pile, I don't think my neighbors would be happy.
I think Dean made a good point. Was it Dean or Dawn at the first caller
about how
little they had to put out in their black cart based upon the fact that they do compost. That's what we found here is there's always at least a third of the waste stream is organic, which means it's food, but it can be plant material. It might be flowers. It might be food soiled paper. Anything that was a tree before can be composted. So paper, cardboard.
So paper goes in there too.
Well, not clean paper. We want you to put, but your, you know, the paper plates,
yeah.
The paper cups, the coffee cup, the pizza box that's smeared with cheese, all of that can go into the green bin. And we find that as people use the green bin more, they can put more and more in it if they sort of let themselves go and start understanding it. And that we've seen dramatic increases in our diversion based upon the organics. And I really think organics is the place that people should be focusing going forward across the country and around the world.
Well, Kevin, stand by there in San Francisco. Let me ask Greg Cooper, Director of Recycling for the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. Is there any kind of organics program in the works in a Massachusetts community like that?
Actually, we have one community that's been piloting. Hamilton has been piloting and Wenham has been piloting a collection program now, and they're expanding it out. It's something new. It's coming into the state. I think we're going to see more and more of it. San Francisco has obviously been on the leading edge of a lot of these issues, but I do envision that we're going to get to that point where we will have a similar system, 3 containers with organics being collected at the curb.
And again, I imagine something like that would be all the more important for the cities, for places where people don't have yards and they can't start compost piles.
Absolutely, and also it pays big dividends as was said in San Francisco that, you know, when businesses are participating, and we're talking about restaurants and supermarkets and those avenues of generation of waste include a lot of organic material which could be easily recovered.
Okay, now Kevin in San Francisco, here's the hitch: recycling in San Francisco is mandatory, right?
Right. Well, that's a recent development. In the last year, we passed an ordinance requiring mandatory recycling and composting in all facilities, on all restaurants, in every venue in San Francisco. We're in the process of converting all restaurants to Burger King has a compost and recycling at their trash, spot inside the store. It's still a work in progress, but it boosted our diversion substantially. Actually, our organics went from around 400 tons per day to over 550 tons per day collection in the city in the year after following the mandatory. We had spent 20 years with a voluntary system, and we had a lot of participation, but it was, as I think it was Ann speaking of, the kind of the 20-60-20, you know, you got the converted who are going to do it, and then you've got the 20 who are never going to do it, 20%
right.
Are never going to do it. It was getting that 60% to do a better job at it, and now we actually have a tool to go after the 20% that will
never do. What exactly is that tool? It's a fine?
Well, we have the right to put a penalty of up to $100 per actually can rise up to $1,000, but we haven't given out any tickets yet. We've been doing it for the last year and 3 months as an education outreach.
And not a ticket yet.
Yeah, no tickets yet. We're waiting to identify the really bad offenders. And most of the people we find offending, we go to and talk to, and we get them to turn it around. It's not like there's talking to people doesn't work. Nobody wants to get a ticket if they don't have to. And there's no garbage cops out here in San Francisco. I'm the lead garbage cop. And, like, I look in people's carts and talk to them about it, what's in there, and tell them what's right and what's wrong and help them understand it. And some people do take offense of it as being kind of the nanny state or, you know, getting after people for the wrong thing. But when you think about it, you go back generations, our parents and grandparents never threw anything out.
They, sure, yeah.
You know, East Coasters, you guys have compost yards, compost piles because everybody did that because they have a big enough yard and they grew stuff. We just have to go back that direction, which is a little bit antithetical to the single stream conversation you had. Mm-hmm. But we have single stream here for the recyclables. We also have a bottle bill, as you do, and that's one way to carve off that glass and the certain other materials, the metal materials that have a value and that perhaps are better handled in a sort of separated manner, so that what remains is when you take the organics out and you take the containers out, everything that's left is pretty much paper or is quite dry and can be sorted through the single stream systems that Ann and Greg were talking about. So I think it's kind of a combination of source separation and commingling, particularly when you carve off that organic fraction, you're ending up with a stream you can really work with and get some significant diversion with.
Well, Kevin, we'll aspire to do as well as you have in San Francisco right here in Boston. I appreciate your time. Kevin Drew is the Zero Residential Waste Coordinator in San Francisco. Thanks to my other guests, Greg Cooper from Mass DEP, Ann Dorfman from Mass Recycle. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
It's been great to be here.
Thank you.